can't have done.
No. I guess not.
What was he working on?
I'm sorry. I should have asked you to sit down.
There was no sofa in the room. No space for one. Any kind of a normal-sized sofa would have blocked access to the bedrooms. There were two armchairs instead, plus a half-sized wooden rocker for Charlie. The armchairs were either side of a small fireplace that held pale, dried flowers in a raw china jug. Charlie's rocker was to the left of the chimney. His name had been branded into the wood at the top of the back with a hot poker or a soldering iron. Seven letters, neat script. Tidy, but not a professional job. Franz's own work, probably. A gift, father to son. Reacher looked at it for a moment. Then he took the armchair opposite Angela's, and Nagley perched on the arm next to him, her thigh less than an inch from his body, but not touching it. Charlie stepped over Reacher's feet and sat down in his wooden chair. What was Calvin working on? Reacher asked again. Angela frowned, said,
Charlie, you should go out and play.
Charlie said,
Mom, I want to stay here.
Reacher asked, Angela, what was Calvin working on?
Since Charlie came along, he only did background checks. It was a good business to be in, especially here in L.A. Everyone's worried about hiring a thief or a junkie, or dating one, or marrying one. Someone would meet someone on the internet or in a bar, and the first thing they would do is Google the person, and the second thing is they would call a private detective.
Where did he work?
He had an office in Culver City. You know, just a rental, one room, where Venice meets La Cienega. It was an easy hop on the 10. He liked it there. I guess I'll have to go and bring his things home.
Nagley asked,
Would you give us permission to search it first? The deputies already searched it. We should search it again. Why?
Because he must have been working on something bigger than background checks.
Junkies kill people, don't they? And thieves, sometimes?
Reacher glanced at Charlie and saw Franz looking back at him. But not in the way that it seems to have happened.
Okay. Search it again if you want.
Nagley asked,
Do you have a key?
Angela got up slowly and stepped to the kitchen. Came back with two unmarked keys, one big, one small, on a steel split ring an inch in diameter. She cradled them in her palm for a moment, and then she handed them to Nagley, a little reluctantly.
I would like them back. This is his own personal set.
Reacher asked, Did he keep stuff here? Notes, files, anything like that?
Here? How could he? He gave up wearing undershirts when we moved here to save on drawer space.
When did you move here? Angela was still standing, a slight woman, but she seemed to fill the tiny space.
Just after Charlie came along, we wanted a real home. We were very happy here. Small, but it was all we needed.
What happened the last time you saw him?
He went out in the morning, same as always. But he never came back.
When was that?
5 days before the deputies came over to tell me they had found his body.
Did he ever talk to you about his work? Angela said,
Charlie, do you need a drink?
Charlie said,
I'm okay, Mom.
Reacher asked, Did Calvin ever talk to you about his work?
Not very much. Sometimes the studios would want an actor checked out to find out what bodies were buried. He would give me the showbiz gossip. That's all, really.
Reacher said, When we knew him, he was a pretty blunt guy. He would say what was on his mind.
He stayed that way. You think he upset someone?
No. I just wondered whether he ever got around to toning it down. And if not, whether you liked it or not.
I loved it. I loved everything about him. I respect honesty and openness.
So would you mind if I was blunt?
Go right ahead.
I think there's something you're not telling us.
Chapter 11. Angela Franz sat down again and asked,
What do you think I'm not telling you?
Something useful, Reacher said.
Useful? What could possibly be useful to me now?
Not just to you. To us, too. Galvin was yours because you married him, okay. But he was ours, too, because we worked with him. We have a right to find out what happened to him, even if you don't want to.
Why do you think I'm hiding something?
Because every time I get close to asking you a question, you duck it. I asked you what Calvin was working on, and you made a big fuss about sitting us down. I asked you again, and you talked to Charlie about going out to play. Not to spare him hearing your answer, because you used the time you gained to decide you don't have an answer.
Angela looked across the tiny room, straight at him.
Are you going to break my arm now? Calvin told me he saw you break someone's arm in an interview. Or was that Dave O'Donnell?
Me, probably. O'Donnell was more of a leg breaker.
I promise you,
Angela said.
I'm not hiding anything. Nothing at all. I don't know what Calvin was working on, and he didn't tell me.
Reacher looked back at her, deep into her bewildered blue eyes, and he believed her just a little bit. She was hiding something, but it wasn't necessarily about Calvin Franz.
Okay. I apologize.
He and Nagley left shortly after that, with directions to Franz's Culver City office, after further brief condolences and another shake of the cold, fragile hand. The man called Thomas Brandt watched them go. He was 20 yards from his Crown Victoria, which was parked 40 yards west of Franz's house. He was walking up from a corner bodega with a cup of coffee. He slowed his gait and watched Reacher and Nagley from behind until they turned the corner 100 yards ahead. Then he sipped his coffee and speed-dialed his boss, Curtis Mawney, one-handed, and left a voicemail describing what he had seen. At that same moment, the man in the dark blue suit was walking back to his dark blue Chrysler sedan. The sedan was parked in the Beverly Wilshire's valet lane. The man in the suit was poorer by the $50 that the desk clerk had accepted as a bribe, and therefore correspondingly richer in new information. But he was puzzled by the new information's implications. He called his boss on his cell and said,
According to the hotel, the big guy's name is Thomas Shannon, but there was no Thomas Shannon on our list.
His boss said, I think we can be sure that our list was definitive.
I guess we can.
Therefore, it's safe to assume that Thomas Shannon is a phony name. Obviously, old habits die hard with these guys. So let's stay on it. Reacher waited until they were around the corner and out of Franz's street and said, Did you see a tan Crown Vic back there?
Parked, Nagley said. 40 yards west of the house on the opposite curb. A base model 02.
I think I saw the same car outside of the Denny's we were in.
You sure?
Not certain.
Old Crown Vics are common cars. Taxis, gypsy cabs, rent-a-wrecks.
I guess.
It was empty anyway, Nagley said. We don't need to worry about empty cars.
It wasn't empty outside of Denny's. There was a guy in it.
If it was the same car.
Reacher stopped walking. Nagley asked,
You want to go back?
Reacher paused a beat and shook his head and started walking again.
Nah, he said. It was probably nothing.
The 10 was jammed eastbound. Neither one of them knew enough about L.A. geography to risk taking surface streets, so they covered the 5 freeway miles to Culver City, slower than walking. They got to where Venice Boulevard crossed La Cienega Boulevard, and from there Angela Franz's directions were good enough to take them straight to her late husband's office. It was a bland storefront place in a long, low, tan strip that was anchored by a small post office. Not a flagship USPS operation, just a single-wide store. Reacher didn't know the terminology. A sub-office, a satellite, a postal delivery station. Next to it was a discount pharmacy, and then a nail salon and a dry cleaner's, then Franz's place. Franz's place had the door glass and the window painted over from the inside with tan paint that reached head high and left just a narrow strip above for light to come through. The top of the paint was banded with a gold coach line edged in black. The legend, Calvin Franz, Discreet Investigations, and a telephone number had been written on the door in the same gold and black style. Plain letters, three lines, chest high, simple and to the point. Sad, Reacher said, isn't it? From the big green machine to this.
He was a father, Nagley said.
He was taking the easy money. It was his free choice. This was all he wanted now. But I'm guessing your place in Chicago doesn't look like this.
No, it doesn't.
She took out the key ring Angela had parted with so reluctantly. She selected the bigger key and tripped the lock and pulled the door, but she didn't go in, because the whole place was trashed from top to bottom. It had been a plain square space, small for a store, large for an office. Whatever computers and telephones and other hardware it had contained were all long gone. The desk and the file cabinets had been searched and then smashed with hammers, and every joint and sub-assembly had been torn apart in a quest for concealed hiding places. The chair had been ripped apart and the stuffing had been pulled out. The wall boards had been crowbarred off the studs, and the insulation had been shredded. The ceiling had been torn down. The floor had been pulled up. The bathroom appliances had been smashed into porcelain shards. There was wreckage and paper strewn everywhere down in the crawl space, knee-high throughout, and worse in places. Trashed from top to bottom like a bomb blast. Reacher said,
"Well, L.A. County deputies wouldn't be this thorough."
"Not a chance," Nagley said. "Not even close. This was the bad guys, tying up the loose ends, retrieving whatever Franz had on them, before the deputies even got here, probably days before."
"The deputies saw this and didn't tell Angela?" "She didn't know. She said she had to come over and bring his stuff home."
"They wouldn't tell her. Why upset her more?"
Reacher backed away on the sidewalk, stepped to his left and looked at the neat gold lettering on the door. Calvin Franz, Discreet Investigations. He raised his hand and blocked out his old friend's name, and in his mind tried David O'Donnell in its place. Then a pair of names, Sanchez and Orozco, then Carla Dixon. "I wish those guys were answering their damn phones," he said.
"This thing is not about us as a group," Nagley said. "It can't be. It's more than 17 days old, and nobody has come after me yet."
"Or me. But then, neither did Franz."
"What do you mean?"
"If Franz was in trouble, who would he call?" "The rest of us, that's who. But not you. Because you're way upscale now, and probably too busy. And not me, because nobody apart from you could ever find me. But suppose Franz got himself in deep shit and called the other guys, because they were all more accessible than the two of us. Suppose they all came running out here to help. Suppose they're all in the same boat now."
"Including Swan?"
"Swan was the closest. He would have gotten here first."
"Possible."
"Likely. If Franz really needed someone, who else would he trust?"
"He should have called me," Nagley said. "I would have come."
"Maybe you were next on the list. Maybe at first he thought six people were enough."
"But what kind of a thing can disappear six people? Six of our people?"
"I hate to think," Reacher said, and then he went quiet. In the past, he would have put his people up against anyone. Many times he had. And they had always come through, against worse opponents than you normally find among the civilian population. Worse, because military training tended to enhance a criminal's repertoire in several important areas. Nagley said,
No point standing here.
We're wasting time. We're not going to find anything. I think we can assume they got what they came for. Reacher said, I think we can assume they didn't.